Okay, that is us on air. This is the DS106 Good Spell, fast and splendidly since 2013 on a DS106 Radio for Life. This is our final season of the DS106 Spell. Each episode consists of one or sometimes more bullets from the blog post 106, published by the DS106 Shrink at 106am on Tumblr at the end of the Headless 13 run of DS106. Our hashtag, 106spell. This is gospel radio for the DS106 generation. Mantras and koans, if you like, that explore the open online course Digital Storytelling 106. Meditations and rambles about education, openness, open education, art, fun and learning. I'm John Johnson, and with me as usual is Mariana Thinnes. Hi Mariana.
Hello John, long time no hear.
Yeah, it's nice to hear your voice and it's nice to be back in the airwaves. I hope we have garnered a listener. The levels are bumping up and down here fine, so I think we're broadcasting. And of course, since we futz, I forgot a bumper, but we'll bumper out and we'll just get on.
Well, we got to talk a little bit about the fact that this is our very final season of the 106 Spell.
Yep, and it features episode titles, which I'm quite excited about. and we've never done that before. And we'll kind of, I guess, be rounding up some of the final bullet points in your blog post. And we'll just see how this goes. And take it from there. And this is Factor X, Episode 1, Factor X. And it combines bullets 93, 94 and 95. So a bit of rapid fire there.
Well, I looked at them and they seemed to me to be quite related as ideas under this heading of, you know, the sort of what's the X factor in DS106. That's why I thought it made sense for us to, you know, to group them and sort of weave them through one episode.
Yeah. So I'm just watching my mic slide slowly down the makeshift table that is sitting beside me. I had a last-minute room change here due to the plumbers running a generator out in the back. So if my voice disappears along with a clatter, it's because the mic has slowly slid off the wee case I've got it sitting on. Anyway. Factor X, what makes DS106, what makes the DS106 container what it is?
Mm-hmm. What indeed. You remember that we had that box that I think Todd Conway had created that said, you know, that DS106 was a box of wonder that was sort of just the box and it was empty and we filled it with stuff we wanted. And that's where that comes from. And it talked about the idea, you know, this idea of so many people looking in from the outside, keep asking, you know, what is the thing that makes the difference? And they talk about the pedagogy, they talk about this, they talk about that. And we often have conversations around, you know, what is the difference that makes the difference? Hence the idea of saying what is the factor X, that the ingredient, the magic ingredient. Yeah. Which I thought was a suitable one to start our last season.
I hadn't remembered that empty box idea, but it's a really good one. But it's a bit like the story of Stone Soup.
Go on.
You know, where everybody brings their own, you know, all the different people bring their own thing to make the soup. The traveller in the story starts off by asking around for food from the locals when this place he stops, and they all refuse him. So he sets up camp and sets up a fire and starts cooking some stone soup. And the curious villagers come across to see him and say, you know, what's he doing? He said, oh, yeah, it's stone soup, but it would maybe taste a wee better if I had a wee bit of carrots, and somebody brings him some carrots, and you can imagine, so on and so forth, until he takes a stone out and you're left with soup. So Maybe this DS-106 container is Jim Groon's stone soup.
I love it! I'd not heard that story.
I think it's. I was planning to do it in my real life, so. Yeah, it's quite a good idea, I think. This idea that we persuade, or I guess, did you ever see an old black and white film, The Music Man?
Mm-hmm. Where, I know that. Go on.
I can't remember who was in it, but it basically is a con man who's selling musical instruments to children or parents of children. And, you know, saying he's got this unique method of teaching them to play. And, of course, he hasn't and he can't play. But because it's a Hollywood movie, everything works out in the end and the children sort of teach themselves and have a wonderful parade.
Did you just implicitly call Jim Groom a con man?
I think that The Music Man would be better. I think it's called The Music Man.
But what a wonderful idea. But it also, I mean, the stone soup idea also says that, you know, each person brings a small something, mm-hmm. and then, you know, you get the whole from what each person, the little bit that each person brings, which is, you know, a lovely idea in terms of, you know, when we think about what makes the S-106 what it is and how often we, you know, we talk about that, you know, that it's the sort of little bit that you can do. To help another, to write a comment, to, you know, to offer a little bit of help when somebody's struggling with something, as well as the things that we make.
Yeah.
It's wonderful. Oh, did you see, have you had a quick look in on Twitter? Alan is saying, you nuts are still at it, the S-106, for longer than life, John Johnston and you, me and you.
So...
longer than life we are.
Yeah, we're still going, Alan. And one of the things,
at least two listeners,
yeah,
because Felix and Alan are listening.
Yeah. So one of the things I meant to say earlier when we were talking about, you know, that people ask about this container, this box, and the bullets you wrote were in Headless 13. Mm-hmm. Run of DS-106. That was 3 years ago. So we've been chipping away at this for at least 3 years. which
exactly,
I think,
longer than life.
it's quite a long time for a podcast about a course that ran for probably 13 weeks. We seem to have done quite well on it. So, yeah.
Do you think that somebody's going to do, you know, like they do in Netflix and they do the kind of binge watching? Do you think that somebody will sit down and do a binge listening to all the episodes?
I certainly hope not, but I think I'll probably knock up a wee page on EduTalk that lists every episode just for fun to let people go through.
So in case somebody's interested in a particular element, you're thinking, then at least they can have a heading. Yeah, that's nice.
Well, they won't have any headings, they'll just have dates up until now. I was thinking more just it will be a big list that you could click, or you could choose a random one or whatever.
I quite like the idea of, you know, one of our million listeners binge listening. I think I should make a poster from that.
Yeah, I think the Scream would be a good, you know, the painting. The Scream, except he'd be holding his hands over a set of headphones as he screams.
Bullet 101, bullet 102.
Yeah.
That sounds good.
So the second bullet of these lists was laughter and fun and the support for finding one's voice. And obviously, laughter and fun. But I don't know if you want to say a bit about support for finding one's own voice.
Well, to me, that connects back to the what kind of, you know, what makes it the container that it is, you know. And I guess with your lovely story, with the, you know, the little bits that each villager brings, what one who thinks that creates a sense of safety and a sense of, if I only have carrots, I only bring carrots and that's okay. And somebody else brings the potatoes, you know, it's sort of, and I think there is something about that enables you to feel safe experimenting. From certainly in my case, from the beginning, where I had no idea what I was doing, go, well, I'll try this, I'll do that, and I'll see. And through all of those experiments, I guess there is a way in which you find probably, I guess, what's more clearer than just my, your voice, it's your voice online and what that is going to be like and what are you going to be doing and what kind of stories do you want to be telling? Are you going to do the kind of long sequential kinds of things, or you and I have spoken before, the focus on doing animated GIFs, for example, because actually your heart is more there than somewhere else, but it's only through the safety of experimenting, trying this, trying that you then find what might be your own shall I use big words, your own voice as an artist.
our challenge, and it's probably more for me than you, is to actually be able to say artist without...
Do you know, I have a colleague who has just retired, and he decided that he was going to just take... He had painting as a hobby, and he was going to take it up as, the thing that he did. And, he was a teacher, yes, in university and the business school, that kind of thing, the same sort of thing that, say, I do. And he's changed everything about how, his digital presence, for want of a better word, to say that he's an artist. Mm. And I am, a bit like you, I'm going, wow.
Yeah.
I don't think I could do that.
Yeah.
So there's no sense of what his background might have been beforehand, what he may or may not have done. No, now he is an artist, and all you can find are the paintings that he's doing. You think, I don't think I could do that ever.
Yeah. It'd be quite challenging and probably worthwhile to do that idea of, I guess when you retire or something, that's maybe a good opportunity to take on a new life, and I suppose the internet lets you do that because you can, well, barring all these people that spy on you, you can present your own self, especially if you've got control over where you post things. Because you can take other stuff down, and okay, it'll be in the internet archive, but you suddenly replace respected teacher with artist or juggler or whatever.
But there is an element, it's because of the laughter, the fun, the experimentation that actually, certainly I would say, I have tried things that I might never have tried, and take the my love for animated GIFs and how 3 years on, as you say, I'm still making them, I'm still spending time learning about how to and so on. Had you told me beforehand, I would never have thought that this would be something that somehow I would find as an expert. Let's not call, I wouldn't call myself an artist, but something that allows me to express myself in a way that is other than words. I'd never would have. I always remember, when we talk about this, I always remember, I think it's Jonathan Worth, who, when he talks to his students, he says to them about how that they themselves have to value and believe in the uniqueness and the specialness of their own work, that if they don't, nobody else will. And I always think about that, because it is a bit like, this guy deciding, now I'm an artist and I'm taking myself seriously as an artist. It means I'm not going to be making money any other way. This is what I'm doing. There is something about making that commitment, and often artists talk about that, the moment in which they make that choice. I've heard David White talk about that when he, that he was sort of dithering and writing poems in secret and in a corner, and then one day, he was very unhappy doing the stuff that he was doing, for making money, etc. And one day he made the decision that, you know, he was going to make his life as a poet. And whatever that meant, even if it meant that, you know, he had no money or whatever it meant. And I do think there is something about the whole point about finding one's voice eventually is that you go, this is it. This is the thing that, a bit like, I suppose I would say, I'm a psychologist or, you know, that kind of thing. In that sense, you know, I'm an artist and I'm this kind of artist. I don't see it for me yet, but, you know, I think that's the idea.
Do you think it's... I'm always frightened myself of big jumps and will fall back on an iron rice bowl if presented with these choices, I think. And I'm not... It's like the other thing that kind of reminds me is, you know, that Steve Jobs famous... what do you call it? Speech he gave at an American university when they were all finishing up. I can't remember what they're called. There's a name for them, but he addressed everything.
Commencement. Was it? That's not it.
Commencement sounds like the starting one.
Anyway, never mind. I know which one you mean. Yeah.
But, you know, and he said, you know, what you've got to do is find your dream and follow it. And that always struck me as sort of false. Because a whole lot of other things need to sort of line up for you to be able to do that. Some of them might be external factors, such as, you know, if you're in a position to do that financially or otherwise, or if you've got the mental or physical ability to do it, but also the sort of personality or whatever you've got. Might just not be, you know, you might not be a good enough poet to make your living in poetry. You just might not be, you might never get there. Or you might just not have the kind of personality that would take a risk and do that. And I'm always kind of, I think this thing of being able to try things out is great because it lets you try things out and you can have fun and do things and incorporate that into your personality, maybe. But maybe it's just my personality isn't one that would go for flipping like that or taking that sort of risk.
The sort of big gesture
Yeah.
Well, but I tell you, I mean, you remind me of, you know, I may have said before, I used to teach at the Drama Centre with, where in London, where they teach the directors and actors, and I always remember the sort of beginning of this of the term for the students, particularly when I was teaching the undergraduates, not the master's people, and the big speech that the director of the school would give the people on the first day was, you know, that he would look at everybody and he would say, you know, of all of you, you know, only, I think it's some in the stats in that at that time was something like only 6% of you will make it as an actor. And when I say that, I mean only 6% of you will be able to make a living, you know, as an actor. Of that 6%, you know, possibly only, you know, only one or two of you will actually be successful. The rest of you will fail.
Gosh.
And he'd go, welcome to, and blah, 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 blah. And I've never, you know, it's like I was full of admiration for this little, I mean, because to me they're wee ones because they're very young people generally. You know, you're talking really, really young people who are really, you know, they've given everything up to chase a dream because why would you go to learn, you know, at the Drama Center unless, you know, this is the thing that, you know, the thing that you decided to do is this is my thing and I'm going to do it. And I often used to talk to them about that, you know, how they handled and they had all sorts of different strategies, but I think to your point about it's never as simple as just follow your dream, because daily they had to deal with rejection. They had to learn how to deal with, you know, rejection after rejection after rejection, but also when they were being taught the way that often they're treated is, you know, they call it notes, I think is the expression, you know, the teachers give them notes when they, you know, they do a performance or they do something. And, you know, all of the teachers would have failed, you know, in my kind of feedback skills courses. I mean, really, some of the stuff that they get told, it's just heartbreaking.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's like you say, it's not enough. You know, it's wonderful that they make the decision to follow their dream. But even when they do, you know that actually it's luck often that will make you succeed in the way that they dream they will succeed. And the reality is that the majority of them will go nowhere. Mm. So, you know, it's very easy to say follow your dream when you are one of the few who have got there.
Yeah.
Like Steve Jobs, I guess. Yeah. But it's more complicated than that.
But maybe we're talking about, again, a 13-week, 12-week course for undergraduates, and you're maybe not going to find your dream and follow it, but you'll maybe find a range of voices, perhaps, that you can use and explore in DS106, which is maybe the nice thing about it. And I guess that feeds back to the laughter and fun and support that you can, you really do get the chance to try things out, and it's probably very different from the situation you're describing. The stakes are not as high, and it sounds like maybe the feedback isn't better quality, but it's a bit nicer.
Yeah. Well, there is less at stake, I suspect. Yeah. You know, because there is that thing of you haven't made an investment in terms of, and I don't mean just money, I mean, you know, investment in terms of your sense of identity as this is what I will be. What you're really saying is, you know, I want to learn about digital storytelling and what it entails. And then from that, things can grow, but you don't really know what at this point, I think, you know, when you start, certainly. Mm. So in that sense, I think the stakes are, It's a lot easier to take a risk in the context of I'm just trying things out and experimenting, as you say, maybe finding out what voices are there to own, and then you integrate those as many of us have. We often talk about, you know, how a lot of the things we have learned in the S106 may not be. You know, I may not be you know, a performance storyteller, but a lot of the things that I have learned, I have and do use in the context of my work. And yeah. I'm sure you do, and I know other people who have done the S106 use it. So there is that, isn't it, that it gets integrated into the larger picture.
Yes, I mean, certainly almost... Although it's a course in storytelling, it's also the digital bit, I think, can fit, both storytelling and digital, I guess, can fit into all sorts of places in your life, you know, or in your work, no matter what you're doing. I mean, you and I both work in education or training or something like that, and there's natural connections there, but nearly everything has some digital element in it now. And just getting the opportunity to learn by playing, I think, is really valuable.
And understanding something about what, you know, this idea of open pedagogy in the context of, you know, teaching on the open web, what does it mean? What can it mean for us in the, you know, as educators? Of course, it's hugely relevant, isn't it, to understand that and learn how you might do something like that if you chose to work in that way. And, you know, what are the drawbacks, what works, etc. And I know that, you know, it has helped many people to understand something about how, you know, how to use the web for learning, I guess, is another way.
Or just to use it for live part of your life, because we really see that nowadays. I think that you can't turn on the, I said turn on the radio because that's what I do. I don't turn on the television very often for news, but you turn on the radio without somebody going on about your data been checked and, you know, all these other things that I think you'll start thinking about ideas of identity and the amount you disclose that you mm-hmm. start thinking about if you do something that's online. You start mm-hmm. thinking about, you know, ownership of data and how to keep yourself safe.
Yes.
And that
yes.
feeds, I mean, it's just becoming a major concern. I mean, I know just going back to work with very young children again after a break of 8 years, the amount of activity that 9, 10 year olds are involved in online has changed dramatically. You know, an awful lot of them have the most common sort of career path that the class have got at the moment is to be a YouTube star. Lots of them are actually reading quite thick books that are written by YouTube stars about how to be a YouTube star and all the rest of it.
Wow.
But that, and I'm not suggesting that's any more likely than 10 years ago when I would have been speaking to wee boys who all were convinced they were going to be footballers. But yeah, a lot of their life is online now, in a way that it just wasn't a few years ago, and that's going to get even more. I was listening to radio the other day, and they were saying that, I think this was in the States so far, that shops were tracking mm-hmm. people's locations from their phones while inside the store.
Yes, I read something about that. Yes.
So that they can create a better sales environment or whatever, or sell more things. And it just boggles your mind, the detail. But I'm presuming they don't even think about the data. They have a machine, an algorithm or a program which will think mm-hmm. about the data for them and do that, you know, in the same way that you know, Facebook will reorganize your stream.
Well, it reminds me of there was this artist, and she, I think it was a woman, and she had done this exhibition where she had somehow managed, I don't know, remember the technical details of how, but webcams that were on and open because their users didn't even know that this was like that. And she'd created a whole exhibition where she was showing live pictures mm-hmm. of, you know, strangers. She didn't even know who they were. She'd collected, like, big data thing, right? She collected all this data of stuff, you know, the Internet of Things and whatever, people who install this and don't put a password and whatever. And she got into trouble in the end. She had to, I think, take it down because, of course, she had asked. She there was no permission. There was nothing. And there were all these, you know, strangers in their house, you know, naked or sitting on their sofas or whatever it was. And this was her exhibition to try and highlight the problem of safety and security online. But I wasn't quite sure about how that worked. But, you know, that was the idea. Because everything is out there. You know, there's lots of things that when people are not aware of the impact, right, of what is open and not, I guess. And so...
Yeah, I saw that. There was a picture recently of Mark Zuckerberg in Facebook, and it appeared that he had got a sticker over his laptop camera. I don't know whether it was or not, but it certainly looked like he had a bit of tape over his laptop camera. And you'd think his their security would be quite good. Or maybe he just knows something that we don't about how to access people's cameras. So that sort of leads us into bullet number three. Respect for our fears. I made a choice not to put my face on the internet. I can only say thank you to everyone for being respectful of that choice.
I always remember that. You know, I still do remember that. Because there was, I remember at the start, what I felt to be pressure to, you know, to put everything out there. I did not feel comfortable. I still don't. I have that choice. You know, that is something that, a kind of boundary for me. And you know, and I do think that it would have been very easy for a kind of peer pressure to go to somehow force me to, you know, put do things that I wouldn't want to do. And I was amazed and always so respectful, like, you know, everybody was, you know, things like when we would do hangouts. Mm-hmm. And I remember people would go, well, you don't have to turn the camera on. You can leave the camera off. Or you don't have to put yourself on video. You can, you know, do something else. And then they would teach me, you know, you could do this and you could have, you know, do a whole movie and have your voice, but not yourself talking. Or you could just record audio or you could do radio. And that, you know, that sense of people. And I've seen Alan, I've seen you, I've seen lots of people when people feel uncomfortable with something. Always holding that space that says you don't have to do things that you don't feel comfortable with, experiment with the things that do feel comfortable, and then over time things may develop so that you might feel okay. So now for me, every so often when there is a point, I will do it and I'm okay to, you know, be on a hangout or to do that every so often. But at the start I wouldn't have been, and I probably would have run away. So this is the thing about if people hadn't been respectful, I probably wouldn't have done something I wouldn't want to. In my case, he probably would have been, this is not for me because I'm not going to be pushed into doing something that I don't want to. But instead, because everyone was so respectful, I guess that's why I set these three really connected up, because it goes back to the people being supportive. So then you can go, oh, I don't really feel comfortable with doing that. I'm not going to try. And then that's okay. So you try something else for a while. It's the reason why I guess it turned into a bullet when I was doing my final reflections, because for me, that was one of the kind of, it was a sort of key factor, you know, the sort of factor X of people not pushing me enough, but not pushing me beyond where I would have maybe gone, no, this is too much for me.
Yeah, and that is, I think, in teaching is a really difficult thing to get right. I wonder if a group of people have a better chance of getting it right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I could see, and I've probably done not the same sort of thing, but something like that in teaching, is that if it's a sort of dictatorship, as a classroom sort of is, you could push somebody too far just because everybody else is doing it. It doesn't seem unreasonable. But if you've got people with different degrees of feelings making the choice, and maybe that's what a DS-106 container is. It's a container full of lots of people, lots of views, and that helps us.
And that somehow, we don't try to homogenize anything. Mm. We just work with what's there, and I guess, you know, like going back to your stone soup, right? Mm. You know, whatever anybody brings is okay, and we'll make soup from it.
Yeah, I mean, I remember, I think, a comment on my blog when I was first joining DS-106 or thinking about it, as Jim said, you know, do what you like gifts, do gifts, don't mm-hmm. worry about the whole thing, you know, I mean, I wasn't doing the course for points or anything like that, but you stay involved if you get an easy on-ramp, and then you get the sort of choice of lanes on the motorway, to continue that metaphor.
yeah,
you know what I mean, and eventually you'll come out of the left lane. That's probably the right lane if you're living in the US. but you know, you'll come out a wee bit and maybe overtake somebody, or maybe, you know, do a wee manoeuvre and then dive back into the slow lane again, and chunter along. But it's a nice place, a nice way for the and I think it's because it's not. And there's not a lack of leadership, I don't think, in DS-106, because all the courses I've ever done have had people leading, but there's a lot of input from the participants.
Well, and I guess we'll talk a lot more, because I think this final bullets are a lot about the kind of bigger picture, and I think a lot of it is also the kind of what is it that you can have, you know, what is it that the leader actually role models. And I think that is important, isn't it? You know, because you can just role model that difference is not acceptable, and that you have to agree with the, you know, with this or agree with that, whatever the rules and regulations. And you know, and there are online courses that run that way, where you basically have to comply, or else you are excluded. And I would say that that is a key thing that we don't do. You know, you work with whatever is there. And what the people like Jim, like Martha, like Alan, you know, who might, you know, originally have been doing the thing, what they model is difference is okay, and starting where you are is okay, and let me try this out as well. So this is the sort of, you know, the show don't tell thing. It's not you just set all these hurdles for people, but actually you jump in there and you do it all with them, which is something I've always believed in my own teaching. But I do see that it happens rarely, because people don't want to give it, you know, they can't give it the time. But just about everybody who I know has done, you know, taught DS106 would take that on board and say, you know, I'm also going to take a risk here. I'm also going to try something that may not work, which of course then encourages one to try, you know, to sort of go a bit faster, or to go and experiment with something that you might not experiment otherwise. And that is something that I think, you know, the whole setup of the DS106 enables us all, the teachers, the students, and, you know, all of us to be able to do.
Yeah, no, that sounds great. Yep. So,
well, look at that. There's Alan was talking about us on Twitter.
Oh, that's nice. I've forgotten to have Twitter. I've been talking too much.
Yeah. Well, we're just warming up. Just warming up today, aren't we?
I just also noticed that somebody retweeted the announcement. Tim Lohr, who is really, as soon as I was online the first time, I think the first person I ever interacted with online was Tim Lohr, who runs a school. I think he just stopped, actually. He's got a more district or something job now. I'm probably making a mistake here if Tim's listening, but he has Lewis Elementary School in the States, that is just a brilliant use of social media and all sorts of interesting things. But I've followed Tim since I was first online, 2004. So if he's listening, I am just made up.
Well, that's lovely. I didn't know who he was. I've not come, but he just followed me as well. I guess he must be listening. So that's lovely. I've no idea who he was, but I guess that's the link. Well, that's lovely. You're made up.
Yeah.
Well, I'm made up. He's followed me now after you said that.
No, it's just the school is fantastic. It's got wonderful outdoor stuff. They've got, you know, great use of technology. The kids are sitting in the corridors working, and just lovely. At least it looks like the kind of school you would want your children to go to.
Wonderful.
Just really nice. The other exciting
his
news.
Before you do that, his little bio says that he is now Director of Digital Learning for the staff of Evergreen School District.
Yeah.
So it sounds like he might have a bigger role now or something.
Yeah, I think he's just moved up. But I think all the time I've been following up until very recently is he was at whichever school I just said a minute ago, and my aged brain has forgotten. Lewis Elementary. Other exciting DS106 news, of course, is that Jim Groom has just brought back to life the DS106.club tilde space.
I know.
I was quite excited about.
Very exciting. Very exciting, that is. We've got that going. Now that I'm learning, it's an excuse for me to concentrate learning more HTML now. So that's happening. Do you know anything about what other DS106s are running this semester? I haven't really had a chance to catch up. I will do for next time. Yeah. I think there is one from the University of Denver going. I think I saw that, but I haven't seen anything else. We can catch up and then maybe do a bit of an update next week.
No, over the summer I think I've done about 5 daily creates or something like that. Although I have looked at them every single day. I have been pretty useless. It looks like there's a UMW Fall 1 that Paul Bond is running.
Okay.
K-State Digital Media 2.
Okay, I think that may be the University of Denver one.
Oh no, there's CU Denver.
Oh, okay.
Laurie Elliott is running. I don't know if any of these have started yet. Well, it looks like they have, yeah, because there's stuff on.
Yes, I think so. I think that there is some stuff that's running. Anyway, we better catch up with things. Yeah. I tell you that DocTrax is overtaken me on the leaderboard because I've been lazy in August and he's been busy. I don't know. I'm going to have to do extra works in September to catch up with him.
You can sneak back. That's on the DS one of the daily.
DS106.us, yes,
which is always a fascinating site. Yeah,
it was a lovely today's daily create was very lovely. We with the reminder because it's September the 11th, and what Alan did was just rerun the same one that ran in 2013. So each year he's been running the same one with a message of hope for today, which I thought was lovely. I actually did do that one today before we came on air. So there you go. Anyway, we better finish. We've gone over time.
Yeah. I'm not exactly sure what our time is, but we have gone over. I'll just look for a bumper now, I think.
Go for it.
I haven't organised any or queued up anything in a fairly useless manner.
The prices.
Oh, here we go. This is one from Giselle. It should have been. This is a starting one, but never mind. It's number one. Listen to the Masters Radio. Get in touch with God. Get in touch with God. Turn your radio on. Turn your radio on.
DS 106 Good Spell. Turn your radio on.
Oh!
So I'm just going to turn the radio off. Good night, folks. Cheers.
Hey, DS106 Radio.
For life. Comes a time.